Today on The Journey, Pastor Steve DeWitt shares a lesson from 1 Corinthians chapter 4.
Spiritual pride divides people. It divides churches. It divides marriages. It divides small groups. It divides friendships. And what Paul's going to say today is that this ought not be, because it mocks the essence of what Christianity is all about in the first place.
All that we have, whether it be material wealth, talents, or spiritual blessings, is a gift from God. That's why humility is absolutely crucial. Welcome to The Journey with Steve DeWitt. I'm your host, Tim Svoboda. And today, Pastor Steve shares a lesson about the importance of cultivating humility and gratitude in your walk of faith. It's a powerful message called The Plague of Spiritual Pride. To listen online and access other lessons from the Christ First series, visit our website at thejourney.fm. Here's Pastor Steve DeWitt.
Let's begin. We are in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 6. Here's what Paul says. I've applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? If then you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? Now, he begins by saying in verse 6, all the things I've said thus far, and we could ask the question, what things are you talking about? And he's really talking about everything he said in the first three chapters. And what we have seen is that this Corinthian church was a seriously messed up church. And one of the huge problems that they had was division within the congregation. There were people that were not getting along. And primarily, there were two factions within the church. There was the faction of the church that said, we think Paul's really great. And then there was another faction in the church that said, no, we think Apollos is really great. And the people that thought Apollos was really great would say about the people that thought Paul was really great, they would say that they don't know what they're talking about. And the people that thought Paul was great would say about the people that thought Apollos was great, those people, they don't know what they're talking about. There's something wrong with them. And so there was this back and forth and rah, rah, rah going on. And to our sophisticated ears, this may sound a little bit, can't believe anybody would ever be that way. But as you probably are well aware, that in churches, there is chronically a problem with people getting along. And there is oftentimes divisions that creep up within the church and unresolved conflicts and all the rest. And so this was going on there in Corinth. And what he has said in chapter 3, we spent a long time on chapter 3, was, hey, listen, recognize that these leaders are servants. They are workers in the field, and they are going to give an account to Christ himself for what they do, the judgment seat of Christ. And we spent a long time talking about that. And oh, by the way, not just the leaders, but all the rest of us as well are going to stand before Christ and give an account for our life. And he's calling us to get ready for that moment. Don't waste your life. You're going to stand before Christ. Serve in this life in such a way that when you're dead, you're glad you did. We've said that many times. So he's been building this whole point, and when it comes to leaders, don't be too quick to put them on a pedestal, and don't be too quick to criticize them either, because we're not the judge. Christ is. Wait to see what Jesus has to say about them, and really about all the rest of us as well. So just this little truth here, I think, would be so helpful in so many situations in churches and would take care of so much of the rancor that unfortunately will often take place. Maybe you've heard of the guy that was shipwrecked on the desolate island. Have you heard about him? Well, let me tell you about him. There was a guy that was shipwrecked on this desolate island, deserted island, and he was there all by himself for many years. Well, one day the ship came in. There was a ship. They saw him. They send a rescue party. The rescue party comes to the shore, and they say, hey, we're going to take you back to the ship. He says, wait, before we go back to the ship, I'd like to show you the town that I built while I was here. And they're like, okay. So they go walking into town, and he says, hey, see that over there? They go, yeah. He says, That's City Hall. He says, see that over there? They go, yeah. He said, that's the police station. He says, see that over there? They go, yeah. He says, that's my church. They said, that's your church? He says, that's my church. They said, well, what was that other church we walked by as we were coming into town? He says, that's the one I used to go to. If you look in most towns of any size, you're going to find First Methodist Church, Second Lutheran Church, Third Presbyterian Church, Fifth Baptist Church, and on and on. I have a friend who pastors a church that begins with 10th. Okay, so you ever stopped and looked at that and thought, where did 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, where did these come from? And in most cases, they used to be one church, and then there was a second, and then there was a third, and then there was a fourth. And why was that the case? Because so often they were unable to get along, and there was unresolved conflict within the congregation. What Paul is going to say to us today is that the core problem at Corinth is the same core problem that has plagued the church all these years, and that is pride. Spiritual pride divides people. It divides churches. It divides marriages. It divides small groups. It divides friendships. Somehow, somewhere, pride gets in there, and it creates a wedge in relationships. And what Paul's going to say today is that this ought not be, because it mocks the essence of what Christianity is all about in the first place. And so we're going to get into that. Paul begins by pointing out where all these problems come from. Again, verse 6, he says, I've applied these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what is written. And what he means there, I think, is not go beyond what Scripture calls us to do, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. And as I just got done saying, this was going on at Corinth. We had these two groups, the Paul group, the Apollos group, maybe the Peter group, and they're all back and forth, rah, 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 towards each other. And he just says, listen, this ought not be the case. And the way that he describes it is that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. Now, that's a fun way to talk about it, isn't it? Pride, puffed up. The Greek word there is a fun one. It means to inflate, or to cause to swell up. It's much like my niece Abby, who my sister-in-law Danny, Abby was sitting on her lap, little girl sitting on her lap, and they were in the car, and Danny caught Abby looking at herself in the rearview mirror. And she watched as Abby sort of went this way and then looked at her face this way. And finally she said to Danny, she says, Mommy, I like me. Oh, those kids are so full of themselves. Aren't you glad we get over that? I think we all have a little Abby in us, don't we? The church of Corinth had a big Abby in them. Lots of Abbeys there. And they were puffed up. And I got thinking about this whole puffed up thing, and I got thinking about the puffer fish. Let me tell you about the puffer fish. I didn't know a lot about the puffer fish. Did a little research on it. The puffer fish is the second most poisonous fish, second most poisonous vertebrae in the entire world. And what happens is, it's actually a small fish, but when a predator comes and wants to swallow it, to eat it, it senses the danger and it puffs itself up by like bringing water in, and it gets big. And as it gets big, the little barbs go out. See those little barbs that go out? And those are all like poisonous on the tips of them. And so out goes the barbs. I thought that was very interesting. The puffer fish makes itself appear bigger than it really is. And the bigger it gets, the more prickly it gets. This is exactly what Paul is saying. These Christians, these Corinthian Christians, they were puffed up. They were filled with a sense of their own self-importance and superiority. They gloried in their spiritual accomplishments. They wanted other people to see them as being more than they really are. I would summarize it this way. A puffed up Christian is hard to swallow. Hard to swallow. Now, Paul is going to point out what puffed up Christians do to relationships. That's the first thing he says here. Verse 6, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. Spiritual pride produces an againstness. When we fill up with pride, we get prickly, don't we? And it's hard to be friends with a puffed up Christian. Can you imagine those puffer fishes, like getting together for a party? They're all, you know, I'm bigger than you. No, not anymore. Yes, I am. And as the little prickles come out, they can't get close to each other. Ooh, ah. It's just like, you ever had relationships like that? That's the way that it works. Everything's about status and image and who's perceived as being bigger and better and all the rest. That's what was going on at Corinth. And that has gone on in the church from the beginning. We spent a little time talking about Jesus in the upper room washing the disciples' feet. And if you're unfamiliar with the story, what happened was the disciples are there in the upper room. It is the night, it's basically the night before Jesus is crucified. And they're in the upper room and they are having an argument. There's this huge argument going on amongst the disciples as to which of them was the greatest, okay? Which of them was the greatest? And so one person's saying, I think I'm better than you. Another person's saying, I'm thinking I'm better than you. Well, some commentators believe that because Jesus' response to that was to take up the basin, the towel, and to wash all of their feet, that what they actually were arguing about in the culture of the day was who should be washing whose feet. So can you imagine how that's going? That was the culture of the day. You wash your feet because you've been walking on the dirty roads. And it was to wash somebody's feet was to acknowledge that you are the servant and they are the superior. Okay? And so there the disciples are arguing about who should wash whose feet. And so Peter says, Andrew, I think you should wash my feet. Andrew says, I ain't washing your feet. You're my brother. You ain't no better than me. You know, that sort of younger brother syndrome that goes on. I say that as an oldest brother. You know, that little youngest brother syndrome going, I ain't washing your feet. You wash my feet. He said, John should wash your feet. John says, I ain't washing his feet. Are you kidding me? I'm the beloved one. And on it goes. You know, somebody says, well, you wash my left and you wash my right. Arguing about who's the greatest, puffing themselves up there in the upper room. Pride divides people. Pride divides churches. Pride divides small groups. Pride divides marriages. Pride divides families. Somewhere, somehow, self is inflating, and the result is division. And I think we should ask ourselves, even right here on this point, perhaps you are here today, and this message is for you from God, because there is unresolved conflict in your life. And heretofore, you have thought that the problem was the other person. But in reality, perhaps, you in some way have an inflated self, and the fruit of that is you got your little barbs out, and you cannot resolve the conflict, because resolution always requires deflation and an acknowledgement out of humility that perhaps I am 1% wrong in this. And maybe God will use this message to somehow resolve relationships and maybe even marriages this weekend. That would be great if he used that, use this message in that way. But puffed up Christians, they can't resolve conflict because they don't want to deflate. They don't want to be viewed as less than anybody else. So Paul has something now to say that he's been waiting 3 chapters to say it. And here it is now. Look at verse 7. He says, here's the prescription for the problem. What do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? Friends, he's talking about grace here. Grace. The most basic aspect of the gospel is the fact that we have done nothing to earn it and that we do not deserve it. Amazing love, how can it be that you would save somebody like me or whatever it says in the lyric we just got done singing? The Corinthians could never sing that song because they, well, of course he saved us. We're the Corinthians. Look at us. We're good. We're all that. No. The gospel does not elevate man. It humbles man and elevates God. It elevates his glory, the glory of his grace in giving us what we do not deserve, which is salvation, full and free as a gift, to us from Christ on the cross, dying for our sins. There's none of us that deserve this. It is utterly of his grace. It is his sovereign grace to sinners, which magnifies our God and minimizes us. Ephesians 2. But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. Corinthian Christians, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything. You didn't merit anything. There is nothing in you that inclined God to save you other than the fact that he is a loving and a gracious God. Friends, listen, to become a Christian, this is the point that many people stumble over in their Christianity, and maybe this is you here today, or their struggle with whether to believe it or not. Christianity requires a humble acknowledgement that I cannot save myself, that I cannot earn favor with God, that I am not a good person, rather I am a sinner in need of the grace of God. To admit and to throw myself upon the mercy of God and to believe that Jesus Christ didn't die for me as a good person, he died for me as an enemy of God and as a sinner. And why would he do it? Because he is love. The gospel gives no Christian any room to puff up. How can we puff up? This is what God has done, not us. And to take credit for it is the height of presumption. So many people struggle with coming to Christ because it requires the last thing that human pride wants to do, which is to deflate. It requires humility and a receiving of the message of the gospel. And Paul says, if all of these blessings have come to you free and clear and on because of nothing that you have done, why do you act all high and mighty like you actually did something to receive it? So do you see what he's doing here? He is turning what he is saying on the core aspect of what the gospel is all about. That man does not deserve it, does not earn it, but God gives it to us graciously, full and free. And this is why, friends, that God hates spiritual pride, because it is blasphemy. It says something about God and about salvation that is not true. It acts like I have done something to earn it, which is the exact opposite of the case. It's kind of like the scales. If you can think of a scale, okay, here's a scale. You know where one goes up like this? Can you visualize? Okay, here's what the gospel does. The gospel elevates God and minimizes man. God is great, God is big, man is small, man is sinner. Spiritual pride does the opposite. It exalts man, and in doing that, it minimizes the glory of God and the goodness of what God has done and his generosity in saving us. And that is why it is a kind of lived out blasphemy and heresy. It is not true. And it creates all kinds of problems in a church and in a Christian's life. So if you received it, why do you act like you didn't? Which leads me to an illustration. I grew up in Cedar Falls, Iowa. It's a town of about, with Waterloo, which they're basically one metropolis. It's about 125,000-130,000 people, something like that. And back in the 80s, which were, of course, the glory years for that town, when I was a teenager, the thing that the teenagers would do on the summer Friday nights, everybody would go cruising. What this meant was that we would go out to University Avenue, and University Avenue between Main Street and Ainsboro, that was the cruising, that was the strip, okay? And so maybe if your friends would say, hey, you want to take a lap? And that meant that we were going out and cruising the strip. So this was big time, man. I mean, it was summer nights, windows down, music going, hot cars, people parking along the sides, hanging out, music, and stoplight after stoplight after stoplight down University Avenue. Good time. Except for Steve and his friend Brian, who was my favorite cruising buddy, because our cars, these are the cars that we had. Volkswagen Rabbit, and he drove a Chevette. We were undeterred by this, though, and we would go cruising. And so the way that this worked is you'd go down and you come to a stoplight. And there was no manual on this. Everyone just sort of accepted how it worked. You'd pull to the stoplight. And what would happen then is some like ridiculously expensive sports car would pull up next to you, driven by some teenager that maybe you know from school or whatever. And so you would like look over at him and he would look over at you and then it was on, okay? Never breaking the speed limit, though. I might hasten to say that for any of the young people that might be here. This is no endorsement of breaking any laws. But the light would turn green, and off you would go. And of course, when you're driving one of these, all you're seeing is taillights, of course, because off they go. But as they pulled away, the thing that my buddy Brian and I would think and maybe even say was, he's driving daddy's car. That ain't his car. That's daddy's car. We took comfort in that, okay? What we never heard as we were sitting there, and you know, the windows are down, we could clearly communicate, never had any one of these guys in the car that said, hey guys, don't worry about it. It's not my car. It's my daddy's car. He's letting me use it. I love my daddy. Not once. The guys, the teenagers that drive those cars, their daddy's cars, they acted like it was their car. I didn't like that. Friend, what do you have in your life that daddy didn't give you? What spiritual advancement, blessing, accomplishment do you have in your life that God has not wrought within you? Why would we act like these things are actually ours, when the truth is, they are His, and He has done them by His grace in us?
You're listening to The Journey with Steve DeWitt, and a message titled, The Plague of Spiritual Pride. If you'd like to hear it again, you'll find the full message online at thejourney.fm. Well, I'd like to take a moment to thank our listeners and the dedicated supporters who contribute generously each month to sustain The Journey's ministry on the airwaves. Thanks to individuals like you, we can extend the reach of God's Word to audiences worldwide through both radio and the internet. This outreach is instrumental in helping people connect with God, meeting them right where they are in their life's journey. By making a generous contribution today, whether it's a one-time gift or a monthly commitment, you play a vital role in ensuring that The Journey continues to deliver clear, biblically grounded teaching to men and women across the globe. So would you give today? Call 844-7-JOURNEY. That's 844-756-8763. Or visit thejourney.fm. And to say thanks for your generous gift, we'll send you a copy of Loneliness, Don't Hate It or Waste It, Redeem It. It's a book by Pastor Steve DeWitt. Despite its challenges, loneliness can become a path to experiencing the presence, promises, and power of Jesus Christ, offering sweetness and blessings along the way. Packed with biblical truth and practical wisdom, this book is a must-read for anyone seeking to navigate the challenges of loneliness and find deeper connection with God and others. And you can request a copy with your gift to The Journey by calling 844-7-JOURNEY. That's 844-756-8763. Or visit thejourney.fm. And while you're on our website, don't forget to subscribe to receive updates from The Journey. Simply scroll to the box at the bottom of the page and then enter your name and email. I'm your host, Tim Svoboda. Come back tomorrow when Pastor Steve concludes our lesson on the plague of spiritual pride. That's Tuesday on The Journey. Today's program was produced and furnished by Bethel Church in Crown Point, Indiana.